It's time for To The Last Drop podcast with Liam Del Calm and Brendan Nell.
Welcome back to The Last Drop. This is our podcast. I'm Brendan Nell, and with me is Liam Del Calm, as always. And our special guest today is all the way from a very cold and dreary Glasgow. I don't know if Glasgow ever gets described any other way. Franco Smith, head coach of Glasgow Warriors. Welcome, Franco.
Gentlemen, you only have two types of days, ones where it rains and ones where it's going to rain. So, as usual, a little bit of a wet morning.
Franco, I mean, you guys had a tough weekend there in the Champions Cup. Tough start to that. Just your thoughts of what happened there. I mean, we saw the game, but just get it from you.
Yeah, I think tough result. In the end, I think we got better as the game grew. I think we were a little bit shell-shocked in the first 20, 25 minutes especially. I thought Northampton did that very well. They have a very good attacking side. They asked questions in the right areas and they unsettled us. We were trapped on the back foot. We kicked poorly in the first half, couldn't get out of a half. The wind was a little bit in our face, but still, I thought the kick chase didn't back the kicking game up. So, and then after the halftime talk, I thought much better actions. You know, I think at times we attacked probably the best we've attacked this far in the competition, in the season. And there's some heart to take from that. I think our set piece was unsettled by them. They definitely, you know, came with a plan to stop the set piece part more specifically. So, yes, I think we have our own introspect to do, but I thought they were quite well prepared and obviously a quality side. It's hard to measure the Premiership's quality against the URC and the top 14. So they just from the start made the point, and you know, it's tough to play us here, and they just came with a very good plan.
Even if you have a decent run in a competition like the URC, I mean, how much do you have to change or sort of alter your approach in Champions Cup? I mean, is that something that you have to be aware of all the time or not?
Yeah, definitely. I think the biggest challenge I think everybody will talk about is to be competitive in both competitions. You've got your squad depth is very important. Obviously, with the Six Nations lurking in the back end of a World Cup, your internationals needs to be managed in a specific way. So there's a lot of different challenges just preparing going into this Champions Cup. I thought we rotated well going into the Champions Cup. So I thought we were best prepared. We had a lot of internationals available for that game. And that does become it's a bit of an execution competition, but it's changed now with a little bit, or slightly, with a new format where it's not so do or die. You can drop off a game or two in our pool specifically. I'm more disappointed that we didn't score the last try because we were 1 foot out, and that would have given us 2 bonus points, which would placed us still, you know, in a very good contention, which we still are. I think if you get 13 or between 13 and 15 points, you will go through to the second round in the group. So your approach obviously is a little bit different than years ago. When I coached in the Heineken Cup years ago, it was cutthroat. You played in your pool and you must basically win all the games in your pool to get through. Now it's a little bit different, seeing that it's different teams playing each other, and they sometimes, you know, you can have the opportunity by beating somebody that's ahead of you, which previously was not the case, you know.
You were on a good run, particularly at home. Does it mean that you need to pick up the guys a little bit in terms of morale? Or, you know, how did the guys take that defeat?
No, the season's divided basically in 3 compartments. We are still in the first part of the three challenges, as we put it. Our first challenge will finish now after Christmas, and we still have the 2 Edinburgh derbies, which is obviously very important as well. And then after that, we'll assess. And usually, I think you use the first third of the competition to establish yourself or to establish where you are in the competition. The second third is about getting better from where you were. And then the last part, obviously, is execution part. Once the internationals are back from international duty in the Six Nations, It's more about an execution part with finals lurking and home playoffs and all of those challenges becoming even more evident. So it's we've just gone in past the first third, I feel thought. We are from a technical perspective and our five big rocks as we speak, properly prepared. I think it's the small things now that needs to, and the continuity maybe in our game that needs attention.
Brendan, I was going to ask you, it was an interesting weekend. I think the two things that sort of came out is usually the home teams in this competition tend to dominate. And we had a couple of interesting results for away teams this weekend. Your next opponent is Bayonne, one of them, drawing with Munster. And then the other thing was the English team's doing so well. I'm sort of wondering, do you also feel that the fact that they lost two clubs last season, that redistribution of those players has almost increased their squad depth a bit?
Yeah, definitely has I've had an effect, I would think. I think obviously they could still fit a lot more players into their budget because the value of the players obviously naturally got adapted to, not just to fit the club's budget, but also because there's so many players available, everybody's price dropped a little bit, and you can then, with the same budget, have more players in your squad. I do think that plays a role. I must say, I also find it strange. I will not have the answer now, but even Connacht losing with 40 points at home made it quite interesting. The URC teams in general were a little bit off it this weekend, which is unnormal, if I can put it that way. Usually in the first part of this competition, the URC teams do really, really well. So it was a little bit of a surprise, the results for me. In our specific case, I think there's enough controllables from our side that wasn't done well. So I think the outcome could have been different. But yes, again, it is evident that the Premiership teams did well. And then obviously the French team, usually the French teams give the first two rounds, give it a go. And if they see they're in it, they continue with their best side in it. If they see that they're falling off, they usually play in the second part of the competition, a less competitive team. So, but it was, again, Bayonne's performance against Munster for us was noticeable.
Yeah. Well, in fact, in your group, all three of the away teams tended to do well. I mean, Bayonne, Exeter also won away from home as well.
Yeah, no, it's going to be, hopefully that's a good sign, Brennan. We're going to Bayonne this weekend. It will be, obviously, we're going to, give it a full go there again.
Have you been there a while now? In terms of our, bedding down the things that you want to establish at that club, the way that you want them to play, the way that, you want them to think on the field, that kind of thing. How far do you think you're down that road? I mean, how satisfied are you with the work you've done so far?
Yeah, obviously, got a year ago, was it? A lot of the. It's always easy to put the first 80% in place, the big things and the understanding of what I want is easy. It's the last 20% that usually takes a year or more to get in place. I think that's where the development and the growth and understanding of how to use your vehicle that you constructed obviously becomes more important. I'm excited, I think, in the sense that we've established a good set piece. We've established a good attacking mindset, which was always part of my DNA. But our defense this season improved enormously. Up until the Munster game, we only gave away 10 tries. Obviously, a little bit of where they had the offers even there a couple of weeks ago regarding that aspect. But again, the building blocks around the defense, the attitude, the physical development obviously was one of the things that I leaned on a bit. We needed to get more powerful, and we see a lot of that and speed. I think our training ground is nice and fast and rapid, and we get some good speed actions out of them. So, yes, we definitely, I think 60 or 70% of the stuff that I think that needs to be in place is now in place, and is now building putting the smaller blocks in place, the mental side of things, the squad depth, the ability to interchange players in various roles and to, without compromising the result, the adding of young Scottish players, because that's obviously the development of young players, I think is a challenge all over the world, or the developing of young players. To get that piece of the puzzle built is now some of the next steps needed.
Yeah, last time I remember speaking to you right at the beginning when you got there, Frank. And I suppose the good and bad of it is we were talking quite a bit about your time in Italy at that stage. And if you look how Benetton in particular have done this season, they've really sort of come into, and the stuff you said was going to happen in the next season or two with them has definitely come through. And even Zebras, I mean, done where your son plays. I mean, they've done a lot better as well, beating the Sharks, which I'm sure is a bit bittersweet at times. But yeah, I mean, you must be quite happy there if you look back at that, at your time there in Italy as well.
Well, it does give a little bit of confirmation, you know, of one's vision and of the work put in. So there is a bit of satisfaction to take out of it. Really appreciative, obviously, of everybody buying in there and the systems that one could have played put in place. You know, when I got there as a coach in 2020, I had 28 players to pick from. A lot of them stopped playing. Benetton was, and Zebre didn't win a game that whole season. The next season, the only game Zebre won was against Benetton. So it was a difficult environment, and therefore the decision to put all these building blocks in place. And now to look back and see that, realizing I definitely still feel Italy is now just going to improve. They will have the most caps in 2032 because most of the players that we started off with and that's currently involved and the next prospects are still under 21, between under 21 and under 23. They will have three World Cups in them, and I think they can improve even more. And if the development path is followed, and you know, I hope and I will be encouraged if they, you know, if they continue down the road developing the players in that way.
This episode of To The Lost Drop is sponsored by the Listen Audio app, where you can stream all your favorite radio stations. You can catch up on all the latest news and entertainment and dive into captivating podcasts like this one, all in one app. So download Listen, that's LISTN, from the App Store or Google Play. The Listen Audio app, everywhere you are.
Frank, you touched on it earlier. You mentioned the big clash against Edinburgh, the big derby, the 1872 clash. Do you feel there's a bit more spice in it this year, given the strong South African influence in both camps?
No, definitely there will be something special. Sean and I have already met up, and our eight teams played each other a couple of weeks ago, so we've seen each other, and I think I can see that and understand you know, the way where he's going to come from. And then obviously they've been playing well. They've been doing well and they've been, obviously the Challenge Cup for them is a little bit different. They've got cast at home this week, which, you know, they don't have to travel. So, it's going to be two very good games, I think. And, we're looking forward to it.
What's different at Cardiff, at Edinburgh this year?
No, I think they've got definitely a little bit of more resilience about them. I think defensively, specifically, there's a little bit more of intent. I know Sean is a little bit defense-driven anyway. So, and I just think there were some good coaches there last season, you know, that maybe now under different management gets a little bit more access to the players. Not that there's criticism on what's happened there before, but always a new broom always, you know, sweeps differently, then not always clean, but sweeps differently. And maybe I think there's a little bit more of contribution. And then obviously with the change, a lot of buy-in from the players. And they look physically very, 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 also much better. So obviously that was one of the points they wanted to work on as well.
I was going to say, talk about South African influence. You can't ask that question without asking the team that everybody watches in URC Leinster, Jacques being there, somebody you know, you've known for a long, long time. Can you already see his influence there at Leinster? And I know it's early days when he's still settling in, but that was quite an interesting game that they had at La Rochelle this weekend in that horrible rain.
Yeah, I think that would have suited him down there. You know, that you can't get much wrong because of that pressure on the attack. Again, you know, I definitely feel that you'll see his influence. You'll see the edges, the defense edges, a little bit more high. You'll see the resilience in the contact and the ability to go forward and dominate the collisions and how to quickly, you know, make yourself available to contribute in the next action. So, yes, I agree. I haven't had to play them already in the first game. Leo and I had a chat afterwards, and I think that is the main things for them, is to see if they can't get that the defense edges higher, you know, and to see if they can't be a little bit even more resilient. And I think that is going to add a lot more value to the already very strong team.
Yeah, I was going to say,
I did appear that after.
Sorry, they're already such a team that everybody watches, and even when they don't play well, they tend to win a lot of their games anyway. But I mean, that just makes the challenge greater for a coach.
Yeah, of course. Look, they've got a great system. You know, they've now, their blueprint has already been coached now on an 18 and a 19 level in the academies there. I think the introduction of new players into their environment is so easy with the players that's been playing for years in that environment, and some experience that has some experience on international level with various different coaches. And I think Joe Schmidt's mark is still there. You know, obviously Lancaster left a big mark on the team there. So now and the continuity and the way Leo manages that group and the buy-in from all the S&C and the academy coaches obviously gives them a very good platform to be more execution-driven in the top end. And, you know, I think every club strives to have that, you know, that kind of look to it. But it will take time. It took them best of 7 years, 7, 8 years to get where they are now. And to just add a coach of value at the top end instead of, you know, changing the player corps is completely a different strategy from where most other clubs sit. Most clubs know that they don't have enough internationals or too many. They know that the squad depth is not yet developed, and they do not necessarily have the infrastructure to develop young players up to that quality level in time for them to be used at a proper age. So they are currently reaping the rewards of years of investment, and not just the financial investment, but also intellectual investment. And that puts them now, makes them obviously now the leaders in these competitions.
Frank, could probably be fair to say that the Springboks, probably not the world's most popular team after the World Cup. Did you cop any sort of, did you get any negative vibes, you or any other staffers, the countries from the teams that the Boks conquered at the World Cup? Did you, was any sort of negative fallout?
No, I definitely felt we had very few friends in the, if I can put it that way. I think across the world, you know, it's always the team that's got the target and back, you know, that will be and most hated. So yeah, I do feel Sia, and obviously the sense of the reasons why the Springboks perform, and for the country, and the fact that they live with their hearts on their sleeve, make them a hard team to hate. You know, so I think they probably not as loved, but they were never hated, and I think they still remain popular winners of the World Cup.
I was gonna ask, because I mean we had Sean on a couple of weeks ago as well when he got to Edinburgh, and asked the same sort of question. Where did you watch the World Cup final? And obviously after that Scotland game, there's a lot of your players that were playing there as well. Must have been a bit bittersweet, although I know the Springbok is still very dear to your heart as well. So.
Yeah, obviously proud South African, and I was proud to be a part of that environment twice, and as a player and as a coach. So, I watched the World Cup final from my lounge by myself. I was actually, my family still in South Africa, and right now here for a visit. So by myself on my couch at home, no special moment for me in that regard. And yeah, I think, although, I work with a lot of Scottish players, it's an easy one for me. I wanted, obviously, South Africa to win, and the affection to Scotland is a completely different one, and in a different way. It's like my affection to Italy. It's not as loyal as I suppose to South African rugby as I naturally am. So yeah, proud to coach here, and proud to have some players there, and have influenced both Italy and Scotland players that's been involved in the World Cup. But obviously, it doesn't change where one's heart.
The last sort of question from me as well. This podcast is called To The Last Drop for a reason. We also discuss wine at times, mostly wine, but other alcoholic beverages at times as well. What did you take to celebrate? And on a night off, what's your poison of note? What do you enjoy having when you have a drink?
Yeah, no, I like a glass of wine. You know, having lived in Italy, so Prosecco is always the one that that I enjoy a lot. You know, I come from the Prosecco region up north in Treviso, and so we like to drink that. And then, yeah, with a glass of red wine, there's obviously some excellent. I've got the Bayer Creek built, a couple of them I brought out with me, and there's. I got a friend sent me a bottle of NAL Signature, but my friends at Lavenier Estate is always the guys that look after me all over the world. You know, they've sent some wine or delivered some wine for me. So yeah, like a glass of red wine, and then from the Italian perspective, there's two wines, Amarone. Obviously, we all know from the Valpolicella Valley in close to Verona, and then. Obviously, around closer to Treviso again, there's the Barolo, and so there's some good wines, and yeah, that's basically where it starts and stops for me.
Well done, I think you're very well sorted. Because I was going to ask you about wine shops in Glasgow, if they are dime a dozen.
Very expensive, yeah, very expensive. For a pound, and the exchange rate makes it hard to buy the bottle that you really want. You know, there's a difference between what you want and what you can afford.
Have you taken to whiskey at all?
I actually have a friend here, Werner Nolte. He's the head of the Stell here in Scotland. So that's the Stell Group. He's or CFO, CEO. Not sure what the title is, but. No, he's actually invited me on a whiskey tour now, and you know, go and see how the whiskey route works, and even here close to Glasgow, in the county of Stirling, there's some breweries there to go and have a look, but not really taken to it. You know, I've obviously tasted it, but I can't determine myself as a whiskey drinker. You know.
Excuse the pun, but just be careful that you can't spite this next.
I'm worried. Yeah,
I was going to actually say, sorry, when we were talking about wine, Frank, I was going to say, I mean, surely there's some trick you could do with your baggage master to add a little bit of extra boxes to come back with you when you come to South Africa?
Yeah, the problem is we play the lions and the bulls. Oh, so it will not be around the farms around.
Well, I'm sure we can organize you something around there. I mean, there are factory warehouses.
Okay. No, Norman Goodfellas.
Brennan, is that an offer?
We'll talk. I know a couple of winemakers as well. I'm sure we can sort something out.
Fantastic. No, definitely. I missed a lot of South Africa's. So a lot of things in South Africa, and yeah, the wine there is obviously very popular in the side of the world as well.
You're with Liam Delcom and Brendan Nell on the To The Last Drop podcast.
For the second part of our show, we'll take you to the Pirates Sports Club, in particular the Pirates Rugby Club in Johannesburg, a wonderful sporting institution in Greenside in Johannesburg. And we went to listen to a lunch, a lunchtime talk involving Bismarck Duplessis and Yanni Duplessis. The Pirates folks are very, very hospitable. And you'll probably pick up from the background sound, it's, you know, it can get a bit raucous, but very festive as well, Brendan, as you found out.
Yeah, I think Liam's being a bit tad modest. Yeah, Liam did the interviews with Yanni and Bismarck for Pirates, and I must admit, a lot of the stuff that was said was your typical rugby lunch, which we probably couldn't broadcast. But
we'll have to tiptoe through the minefield here.
Yeah, we managed to get a couple of clips that we can, which will give you a good sense of how much fun it is. And I must say, if you're out there, and you do these rugby lunches at some point. These guys, Bismarck and Yanni, are great, great guys to have there. And they stayed for a long time afterwards and interacted with everybody. I was quite impressed with that. Took a lot of selfies with people and really seemed to enjoy themselves at the club. So that was good to see.
Yeah, they were very generous with their time, with their spirit. It really was a wonderful occasion. And quite a few people came up afterward and said one of the better lunches they've had there. But you be the judge.
Our day music, so in 2007, there was like Bismarck sitting on the bench playing against his unit in Kingsport. Jack White's the coach. Jack White's a unique man, eh?
Unique and interesting, but it's not very infamous, isn't it?
Let's call it unique. So, I drove through the night, Friday night, to see my brother make his debut at King's Park. He's a home stadium. All my family throughout the whole country tried him. And Spivak Lee, they played brilliantly. They end up losing by 4 or 5 points, which is for fucking 50-50 call. And like a pick and go try, and they score the try, so we lose. But Jake doesn't put Bismarck on the field.
That's unheard of.
He warms up for like 50 of the fucking day the next day. Now I'm driving back, I've got to be back in hospital, a student there. The Sunday afternoon, Jack calls, listen, you've got to pick for the strong side to go and play in Australia and New Zealand. I'm thinking, yeah, this is my John at the university, he's not going to go with me. And I say, who made the call?
Was it Peter Houston or something?
Peter Houston, yeah. But he speaks in a different English, so I'm thinking it's going to be.
You need a special decoder, basically.
But you must remember, at the time, before I went to Durban, the only English I knew was yes, no, chup and tie, fish and chips, and fuck you.
Now I get the score, and they say I broke up, and I'm thinking it's a joke. Anyway, we ended up going. Christian Soffer was able to play the test match. He dislocated his elbow at training. Now I'm in the starting lineup. We played against Australia at the Olympic Stadium. 100,000 people, 90,000 people. It was like just after the Olympics. It was Stephen Larkham and George Greger's last game in Australia, which I'm actually quite honoured to be able to have been part of. But we lead, anyway, I don't want to go into the details, I can actually remember that game vividly. We lead 17-0, there you go, Clark.
It was an unlikely Springbok team because Jake rested quite a few box.
We were called the B-side in the media, and the media said, listen, they shouldn't beat us by 100 points. All time we were leading 17-0. Anyway, so now we make our debut together on the 7th of the 7th of the year 2007. Then, a week later, we played the All Blacks in Christchurch.
That was this.
Used to be called Jade Stadium then.
Before the earthquake.
Before the earthquake, but now I think it's called Amy Stadium or something. But Jade Stadium was unique. So now I'm just walking myself facing the All Blacks the first time, playing the All Blacks. We both actually had a great game. And I honestly believe that Bismarck, in that game, played himself into the World Cup squad. Because 2 weeks later, Pierce Fisk got injured, and they didn't pick a loose forward, they picked him. So we ended up losing
33-6.
But 76 minutes, and 76 minutes
I was at the game, so it was, I think after 68, it was 12-6.
68-6. It was more or less 10 minutes ago, it was 12-6. So we played brilliantly against a great All Blacks, the best, the world.
And this is the Barbie team,
yeah. And that game actually, firstly, gave us a little bit of hope. Maybe we can make a World Cup side, but you didn't put your heart on it. But most importantly, that, listen, regardless of what people say, if you go out and give everything, you you can make it. You can, you have a chance. Yeah, there's still a chance. This guy's not gonna, these guys are not going to humiliate you because they picked their best side, and with 10 minutes to go, there were 6 points into the game. And two things happened. Oliver van der Berg had a geel card gekregen. Brandon in for tackle. And Tondra Shabanga had not gone scoring. It could have gone the other way. So that game, looking back, gave incredible belief in if you prepare well and if you really give everything that you have, you can stand toe-to-toe with the A side of the All Blacks, the best. I mean, Richard played, Dan played, they picked their best side, and we could hold our own. So looking back in our careers, that game was can't say a turning point, but Keith Robinson was a lock. He played for the Chiefs, he was the enforcer, he was a mean guy, he was their boss. And I remember it, like 42 minutes, 44 minutes, just after half time, I saw his hands were closed, and I thought, if you're an enforcer, I mean, just prove it. And I knocked him. My knuckle to this day is like, it has a bit of a chipped. And then I expected a backlash, and I expected him to stand up and say, listen, who are you, young man, or who? And I mean, I knocked him hard, and he did nothing. And almost like, I thought, like, listen, if you fight fire with fire, you have a chance. And I mean, looking back at my whole career, I many times look back at that game because the uncertainty and the worry, am I good enough? Can I do this? Before the game was immense. But after that game, I knew that on their best day, they would beat me convincingly, but they would have to work very, very hard for this.
You're with Liam Delcom and Brendan Nell on the To The Last Drop podcast.
For our last part of the show, we're going to do some predictions. It's the Champions Cup Round 2 and Challenge Cup Round 2. We obviously last week had some big games. I think quite surprisingly, 7 out of the 8 English teams won their games. Not a great weekend for URC sides necessarily, but the South African sides did pretty well. 4 out of 5, just the Stormers losing, and losing by a whisker in the end with the second string side. So all around, a very interesting, absorbing weekend of rugby.
In fact, the other big takeout is I think that English success came almost at the expense of French success because the French teams seem to struggle. I think Toulouse and Bayonne are two exceptions there, but for the rest of them, yeah, not a great weekend.
Yeah, absorbing game between La Rochelle and Leinster, which Leinster finally broke that duck against La Rochelle, which is huge for them. But I think the most surprising result for me was Connacht losing at home at the Sports Ground by 40-odd points to Bayonne. I must admit, I didn't see that. So,
yeah, it's difficult to make sense of what's happening at Connacht. The big difference, of course, on the surface would be the change in coaching. Andy Friend left the head coaching job at the end of last season. He went off. But, yeah, it's difficult to exactly sort of put your finger on you know, what's gone wrong.
Yeah, I mean, they've been doing pretty well in URC. I mean, they've had a pretty decent run in URC. They're in the top 8. So it's, yeah, it was totally unexpected. But, yeah, in the Sports Ground, no South African team has ever won there. So to see another side so far, I think, was the surprising thing. Bulls against Saracens, I think the Bulls should be pretty happy with that. Yeah, even though they didn't get the bonus point, they scored 6 tries, played some amazing rugby. And, yeah, if that's the Bulls, yeah, the way they're going to play in this Champions Cup, I think they're going to surprise a few people, at least at Loftus. The key for them is going to be winning away. They've got a tough game at Lyon this weekend as well. But let's get into the predictions. It's no use looking back. We've got to look forward. So, yeah, the round opens on Friday with 2 games. Glasgow Warriors against Bayonne, which you've heard Franco Smith speak about a bit earlier in this podcast, and Northampton Saints against Toulon. Where do you see those going?
Well, I think, and it's probably going to sound like a bit of South African bias, but I think Glasgow Warriors at home will be a very hard nut to crack. I think they've got enough going for them. They've had a couple of setbacks, but I think what they've taken out of it, they will apply. And I think this is one of those weekends where, you know, it's almost a must-win for them. Not quite, but it's almost a must-win. So I think they'll pull through.
Except that they're playing at Stade Jean Doyenne in Bayonne.
So. Oh, dear. Oh, it's the other way around.
Yeah. Don't worry. It's one of those things. But, they lost at home last week. So this, you're right. Franco said it was a must win, and they're going to be putting everything into this game. And it'd be interesting to see how Bayonne did, because as I say, they surprised us there. Me, Northampton winning at Glasgow last, and Toulon losing to Exeter. Northampton being at home, you'd probably favour them by about 5 points as such. I don't know if you disagree. And then we look at Saturday's games. Big one at Cape Town Stadium. Started Rochelet, La Rochelle, against the DHL Stormers. John Dobson's left a lot of guys at home for this one. Being ready for this. This is their big test. And playing at home, the difficulty, as we find in this competition, is just how the French sides take this competition. Because they sometimes, Papillon sent 5 under-19s in their starting lineup against the Sharks last week. You never know whether they're taking it seriously or not.
Yeah, it is a massive test for the Stormers. I think two teams that are, I think, fairly well matched in certain areas. And I think if you take into account that La Rochelle dropped points at home last week, albeit against Leinster, I think this game takes on a greater significance for them because, as you said earlier, while they might have been tempted to rest one or two guys for the trip to Cape Town, they now suddenly in a position where they probably have to win this one. So they will have to take the big guns. And look, I mean, that will only, add to the sense of occasion. I really think it's one of those cracker matches in the pool stages of the competition. So I think a tough one to call, but I'm going to go with the Stormers purely, it's the home ground advantage, obviously. And I know La Rochelle will be smarting from last weekend's match, but I think that also would have taken quite a bit out of them. So I'm going to go back to with the Stormers by a few points.
Yeah, to me, I'd probably also go with the Stormers. They've got to hit form sometime. They haven't played at Cape Town Stadium. They've got the new pitch. I think just that'll add to the exuberance as such. And I think making the whole trip from Northern Hemisphere to Southern Hemisphere has an effect as well. So I think that's the cracker game this weekend. In fact, of all the games, if you can get down to the stadium, I think the Stormers deserve your support there. So please do. And then, the other two games that are still on Saturday in the same pool as the Bulls, Saracens come up against Connacht and Bordeaux play Bristol. Bordeaux and Bristol both won their opening game. So that's going to be a very interesting playing at Bordeaux. And Saracens playing at home. I think I'd say Saracens should win that one at home, I reckon. They'll also be smarting from their loss.
Yeah, I'll go with you there. I think they'll win probably in the end fairly comfortably.
Yeah. And the other one's a bit hard to call, but you'd probably go for Bordeaux being at home again against Bristol. Bristol had a great win as well. So it is a difficult one to call that one as well.
Bristol's one of those sides that can turn up and make life very uncomfortable. They also have a style of play where they don't mind taking the dog off the leash. So I think either way it will be a fairly tight one, but I will have to favour the home side.
It was quite a bizarre game, that Bristol Lyon game, because Bristol were up by 20 odd points. Lyon stormed back and were leading, and then Bristol came back at the end to win it. So it was a great game to watch. But at this stage of week one, it's always difficult to tell who's exactly in form and who's not and who's taking the competition seriously. So Yeah, obviously it brings the Bulls to Lyon, and they went down quite badly. I think it was 31-7 last year. They weren't ever in that game, and the scoreline could have been much bigger last year. They're a year older, a year wiser. They're sending a very different team this year as well. So, and quite interestingly, a start for Henry Immelman, his first start for the Bulls as well, when they name their team on Friday. And Marcel Kitsir will be on that squad as well, but it's a tough task for the Bulls to go win there.
Well, I suppose one would be able to sort of glean a little bit more once you see, you know, the starting lineup that they put out for that game. And how it differs, you know, how many names differ from the one they put out against Saracens. Yeah, look, the travel factor there again, you can't wish it away. And if you think back to last year, that was a very awkward trip for the Bulls. But as you said, I mean, you make a good point. I mean, they're a year older, a year wiser, hopefully. So it certainly won't be as one-sided as it was last year. I mean, we can say that with a fair amount of assurity. You know what? I'm going to go the Bulls.
Look, I mean, I think the Lions showed last week in the Challenge Cup that if you do play sort of test match rugby, and South African sides love playing that sort of rugby. It was quite funny when Ricardo Lopes was asked about somebody, one of the journalists said to him, are you going to continue playing ugly rugby? And he said, it's winning rugby, not ugly rugby. And I think if you're
a Lions... Sounded a bit like Jake White there when he said that, didn't he?
Exactly. So I can see the Bulls reverting to very... Yeah, structured percentages game plan in that as well. So it'd be interesting to see how they do. I'm obviously hoping for that, for the Bulls win there, but all South African teams, but it's going to be a tough one for them. After that is another big game for the weekend, Sale Sharks against Leinster in Dublin.
Well, I think most teams going to Dublin and face Leinster know the magnitude of the task facing them. So... Sale is also, look, they're tough customers. They don't go away easily. So I think there will be a game, a proper contest for probably 60, 65 minutes, but, you know, Leinster will pull through. Of that, I have no doubt.
At the cow patch, anyone who's been to the RDS knows it's, it reminds me of, I'm not a big fan of the RDS arena. It reminds me of, you remember the Rand show with the cow paddocks around? Very much of that type of feel, because it's the showground. So, I mean,
In fact, similar to the ground in Christchurch as well, after they had to vacate Jade Stadium, also agricultural showgrounds, and I know that the change rooms are quite a distance from the actual pitch, and you never know what you're going to step into.
Yeah, well, I think that's the thing. I mean, the one RDS, hopefully you don't step into those things, but you find some of that when you play Leinster anyway, apparently. So, you'll take Leinster to take that one. Cardiff have a home game against Bath. Cardiff had that horrible trip to Toulouse. I mean, you really felt for them, going there.
Well,
I'm being nice now. It's Christmas, Liam. It's Christmas. So, but Bath and the Johan van Kraan has really shown some good form, and they're really on the high at the moment, and beat Ulster quite easily last weekend as well. So. With Finn Russell there, I can't see Cardiff actually holding them up. I think Bath's going to come away with a good victory there.
I tend to agree with you. Bath seems to be one of the sort of happening clubs at the moment. And I think with Cardiff, they've been difficult to predict. I mean, a couple of good wins, they beat the Sharks. But they've been very up and down. So it's difficult to sort of put your finger on them in terms of form and consistency. So, I'm happy to go with you there. I think Bath, not firm favourites, but certainly favourites.
Yeah. I think Cardiff's depth when it comes to the two competitions probably catches them at the end. Seems to be a general thing in Welsh rugby at the moment as well. Going to run through the last couple because there's still the Challenge Cup as well. Ulster hosting Racing, Exeter hosting Munster, also a big game, and Harlequins hosting Toulouse. And then the last one, Stade Francais, Leicester Tigers. All huge games.
That's a tasty one, isn't it?
It's a Sunday. I tell you what,
I tell you what, if Leicester plays and are as switched off for a large part of the game as they were last week, then I fancy Stade Francais.
Oh, so, So
yeah. So yeah, I'm gonna go with the home side there.
Yeah. Just the one before it, Harlequins to lose. Phew, that's another appetizing one. Harlequins played some amazing rugby.
I think it's one of those ones where it really is up to the appetite of Toulouse. I mean, if they deploy their big guns and identify a game, they're hard to stop, even on the road. So I think that's certainly one. If you can have a bit of a punt, have a look at the starting 15 or match day 23. I'll go Toulouse.
Exeter Munster were disappointing last week, Drew. Exeter won, so, and playing in Exeter, it's not that, I don't think it scares Munster, but Munster are going to have to find some form because I think they let themselves down a bit last week. So.
Mm. Munster also, but inconsistent. And, if you're inconsistent and you go to Exeter, you're going to struggle. So I'm going to go Exeter.
Ulster Racing, to me, depends on what team Racing picks again. But if Racing picks a good team, it's going to be a good contest. They could come away with a win. If they don't pick their starters, I think Ulster's got that one. So, also a team.
Actually, it's a tricky one. I mean, normally you'd say it's definitely a win in Belfast for Ulster. But I mean, the Kingspan hasn't been the fortress that it has been in previous seasons. So I'll just leave the door a little ajar. I still think they'll win. I still think Ulster will win.
I'm going to quickly run through because there's a bunch of Challenge Cup ones. So I'm just going to do a quick fire.
It's going to be one line. It's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So Scarlets, Georgia's Black Lions.
Probably Scarlets.
I think I'm going to go for the Black Lions. I think they've got something in them, especially and they like beating Welsh teams. So Gloucester, okay. Clermont at Gloucester.
Gloucester, Clermont. I'd go Gloucester only because Clermont went on the road. There's a huge difference between Clermont at home and them on the road.
Another one that really doesn't whet the appetite, Oyonnax, if I'm saying that right, and Zebre.
Oh, toss of a coin, really. Zebre.
Yeah. They both aren't doing great. Edinburgh, Cast.
I'm going to go Edinburgh.
Yeah, same Edinburgh, yeah. Benetton, USAP's Papillon. I think Benetton definitely.
Benetton should have that. I mean, there are so many pointers in their favor there, yeah.
Yeah. Emirates Lions, Newcastle Falcons at Ellis Park. Definitely Emirates Lions for me. So probably by about 20.
Yeah, I mean, the Falcons are on a very low ebb on and off the field. So, yeah, Lions.
And another one that's really going to get you to the TV, Pau against the Dragons. Who's going to be the best of the two bad teams? I don't know.
It's one of those where you're going to say, home ground advantage to count for something.
It's going to count. I don't know. If it doesn't count for something, Power's really in trouble. Then Sunday, the big game. When I said the big game, there's only two games on Sunday. First, Montpellier hosting Ospreys. I think Montpellier will probably take it, even though they're not in great
form. Yeah. They're struggling in the top 14, but yeah, you'd think that they'll have enough there.
And then the big one, the Toyota Cheetahs against the Hollywood Bet Sharks.
Yes, a tasty one that. Again, it'd be interesting to see what the Sharks put out for that game. Look, I mean, they still sort of need to get to a point where there is consistency in selection, consistency in performance. So you would think that, the coaches would settle on a combination that they can play for a few weeks and they can settle and they can bed down certain systems. So let's go on the presumption they'll pick their best 23 or what they deem to be their best 23. And in that case, I would go with the Sharks. But anything short of that, I think the Cheetahs will take them.
I think I was chatting at Loftus at the practice yesterday to one of the a former Free State fly-off. People might be able to work out who that is, who's involved with the Bulls nowadays. And he was saying to me that one of the things that troubles him about the Sharks, and we're just chatting, it's just banter on the side of the field. And he was saying is that in his time, you could always know what the DNA was of every team. And he says when he looks at the Sharks at the moment, they look like a team that's not sure of their own DNA. With the Springboks, I would say the Sharks, if the Springboks all perform, if Lucanio and Eben are playing and they inform, I think you probably see a Sharks victory. But if the Sharks are going to come in with the same sort of game plan as they did at Loftus a couple of weeks ago, the Cheetahs have got a very good chance.
So. Yeah, they certainly can't afford to be off their game. And if they are, shouldn't be. It can't be by much because the Cheetahs will beat us.
And saying that, I think that's all we've got time for this week. It's been an interesting one. Getting closer to Christmas. Make sure that you've got your stockings filled and hopefully join us with a glass of wine next week when we have our second last show for the year. Should be quite fun.
Yeah, you go for the full stockings. I prefer Santa's bulging sack. I think that's probably a better description for this year because we all need a bit of a cheer, don't we?
I think we all do need something to cheer us up. So on that note, I think let's leave it there. Chat to you guys next week. Cheers.
Ciao.
Thanks for listening. And a reminder, you can find all the To The Last Drop podcasts on the Brendan Nell YouTube channel, iono.fm, Spotify, player.fm, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, and iTunes, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.